Hey everyone, my name is Martin Willis and I'm the host of Podcast UFO. This is our first show. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. My hopes are is that this site will be interactive. You're welcome to contact me to see if you can have an interview with me, or you can submit. All the information is on our website, podcastufo.com, and my email address is info@podcastufo.com. Thank you for listening. Our first guest today is Stephen Bassett, and here's our show. On Skype with me in L.A., I have the Executive Director of Paradigm Research Group, Stephen Bassett. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing fine, Martin. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And also, you are a political activist. Can you kind of explain exactly what your position is on that?
Well, I'm not involved in the phenomenology of UFOs. I'm involved in the politics of extraterrestrial phenomena. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a researcher. I'm advocating for policy change from the government with respect to this phenomenon. The current policy of the United States government, which was actually put in print for the first time, frankly, on November 4th, is that there is no evidence at all for an extraterrestrial non-human intelligence engaging us, which is, of course, not true. In fact, the government has been deliberately withholding information and any formal acknowledgement of this reality since the late 1940s as a matter of national security policy. So my job is to change that policy. I'm part of a movement which is often called the disclosure movement. And the goal is the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by government. That would be the disclosure event, capital D. Until we get that, we have not succeeded. In the meantime, we'll continue to raise public awareness and pursue that goal.
Yes. The one question I have on this thing that came to mind before I talked to you was, if the government did go ahead and admit basically that they've been covering up and lying all these years, how would they justify the tax money they've spent on, say, SETI and Kepler and things, in regard of searching for extraterrestrial life, if they've known it's been here all along?
The government has a great deal to answer for, clearly, after disclosure. Mm-hmm. There are a huge number of questions that could be raised about that policy. That's one of them, but there's plenty more. But the truth of the matter is that they will justify this policy on the basis of national security, period.
Right.
And the reason I don't call it a cover-up, but rather have insisted that, or made the effort to call it a truth embargo, is that a cover-up implies illegality and criminality. And it wasn't illegal. The policy to withhold the ET, an acknowledgement of the ET issue as real, was perfectly legal. Even without a National Security Act of 1947, it still would have been legal. This is clearly a national security matter, and they were faced with some very tough decisions to make back in the 40s and the 50s with respect to this, and they decided it had to be withheld. So it's not illegal, and if SETI was funded and created to help divert pressure away from the government by providing a sort of front, a program to give the appearance the government does care about the issue and is looking for it, then that would be money spent in service of national security. If technology is being withheld that could be very beneficial to us, then they will justify that on the basis of national security. So it's that simple. Now, to the extent that the public accepts that explanation, remains to be seen. But the vast majority of people who are not aware of these, how would you say, awkward aspects, the public relations issues, are only going to really be interested in, well, what can you tell us now and what's going on and what do these ETs want and so forth. So while these concerns are important and I think that they will be addressed in various ways, they will not pose initially a major issue for the United States government. And people will be looking forward, not so much backward. That's my belief. That doesn't mean that it won't be awkward and there won't be a problem. It is a serious public relations issue, and there are questions to be answered. But overall, the disclosure event kind of overwhelms these concerns.
Now, do you think if this disclosure came to fruition, that it would have to be, and there would have to be a lot of countries involved all at the same time? I know that France has come out with something, and recently the Mexican government, the Air Force actually showed video, which was the first time that was actually released to the public. So do you think that, like, all countries would have to come forward with this all at the same time for it to work properly?
No, and that's not likely to happen. Many governments have been taking some actions which are advancing the disclosure process and putting pressure on the United States, by not the least of which is releasing thousands of files into the public domain. There have probably been about 30 countries that have taken one action or another, but there's about 12 that have really done quite a bit in the last 10 years, including France, the United Kingdom, Canada, Denmark, Sweden, and others, and some of the ones you mentioned. But it's likely that disclosure, this formal event, this formal announcement, will start with a single country. The reason is that it will be very difficult to coordinate, say, some sort of group announcement without risking a leak. And I'm sure the United States government is very concerned that this might leak out ahead of time and create a kind of media frenzy, which would force their hand. They want to do it. They want to do it clean. They want to come forward. Yes, this is it. Here is what's going on. Or we acknowledge the CT presence. We'll be answering questions over time, whatever. But they don't want this thing to sort of be messy. And to try to coordinate a number of nations on an event of this magnitude without it suddenly getting out would be very hard. So I anticipate a single country will act first. The most likely one is still the United States. But with the passage of time, there's increasing prospect that another country will act first. The United Nations could do it, but I do not think the United Nations will be allowed to do it. It's also possible a major religious group like the Catholic Church could trigger this. But again, I don't think so, because there are some reasons why that's probably not a good idea. So the most likely scenario is a single country, probably the United States, will go before the public, will acknowledge this reality, probably present, I don't know if they have to, but they probably will present some evidence and corroborating evidence to make the point. And then other nations will follow very quickly. The press will immediately put questions before the leaders of other nations within their own countries, and they will have to respond. And with the issue now out, particularly if it's a major country like the U.S., these other nations will follow, and you'll just have one after another confirming that acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Until, you know, there's 10 or 12 or 13. That's all it's really going to take.
Right.
And it'll unfold that way. This is the most likely scenario that I see happening.
Okay. Now, WikiLeaks, I've found online there's some correlation between WikiLeaks and UFO documents and things like that, but I don't know what is true and what is not. Do you have any take on that?
Nothing of any consequence regarding the ET issue has come out of WikiLeaks. There is speculation that they have received documents or they've received information. It's very possible they have. There were a couple of communiques that were included in one of the major releases that they did that alluded to UFOs in the context of, I forget the nation involved, but they were hardly significant. WikiLeaks certainly has the potential to impact this issue. Now, a great deal of information and documents and everything else has been out there for some time on websites all around the world. So WikiLeaks would have to come up with something new and a good deal of it and publish it. If they did, it would heat the pot closer to boiling without question. But so far they haven't done it. And I think WikiLeaks knew that it was already in deep controversial water from the outset and quickly made enemies amongst the major nations. So their plate was pretty full. And I think that they probably were very concerned that if they were to bring out ET stuff, UFO-related stuff, that it would undermine their overall credibility amongst the general population. It would be a liability, not an asset. And there was plenty to release, so they have stayed away from this. Now, of course, the governments were extremely angry about this, and they've already made their counterattacks against Julian Assange. Mm-hmm. And they have tied WikiLeaks up a bit. It's not getting the press it got. It's not as active as it got. They've created division by charging him with sexual misconduct in Sweden. Right. I believe those charges are utterly bogus, and that the other stuff being pressed at him are bogus. This is hardball. This is nasty business. In another time, someone like Julian Assange would have been assassinated extremely quickly.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But this is a different time, and he has gone very public. So I am sure that the UFO ET issue is something that a lot of nations, including the U.S. government, are very concerned could turn up on WikiLeaks. But in order for that to happen, some people are going to have to provide him a lot of, or provide WikiLeaks substantial documents that have not been seen before. And if that were to happen and they were then published, there would be a definite effect. Is WikiLeaks capable of triggering disclosure outright? Not likely, but they could set in motion some media activity that could lead to disclosure in a period of time. One of the things going on right now is that documents relevant to the Clinton administration are now accessible and are being accessed, particularly by Grant Cameron, the Canadian researcher, who has an important website, presidentialufo.com. And some of these documents could be helpful and relevant, particularly with respect to the Rockefeller Initiative. And FOIAs are continuing to be filed, but right now, nothing major has come out that I'm aware of recently. And the FOIA law is such that the government is not required to release anything it doesn't want to release. So the FIA is mostly just a procedural or a process law that gives you an avenue to possibly to get some documents from government that you could also possibly get simply by going to the agency in question. But the idea that the FOIA allows us to really get at some secret material and controversial documents that would raise all kinds of important questions is bogus. They can withhold at will under the guise of national security. But it's better than nothing, and it has been used, and it has gotten documents from time to time. There's been so many thousands of UFO FIA filings that occasionally an agency will make a mistake, and some will get released that shouldn't get released. But the FOIA law, to be truly a public asset, needs to be strengthened. And I don't expect that anytime soon.
My normal co-host that's on the show couldn't be here today, and he had a question for you. He's more or less a skeptic, but his question was based on if the government did disclose, wouldn't there be panic, is his question. And another thing, you know, what would the religious implications be, et cetera, et cetera. What's your take on all that?
There's two things. One, a lot of this concept of disclosure leading to panic and destruction of religion and economic systems and what have you is propaganda that the government encouraged and probably even dispersed over the years to help maintain the truth embargo, to help keep people satisfied with not wanting to know more, the press from not engaging the issue, and certainly for insiders not to go public, to honor their agreements, to not violate their national security oaths and confidentiality agreements out of moral conscience. Because, well, look, if you tell the truth, you know, civilization will collapse. Good strategy, and I think it worked. The second point is that I think that certainly if the extraterrestrial presence had been acknowledged and almost was acknowledged in 47, the Roswell event, people may not realize, most people do not know the details of Roswell, but the fact is that if only another 24 hours had passed before they were able to get the second story out, I think the Roswell event would have led to disclosure right then in 1947, because quite a few reporters would have made their way to Roswell and started interviewing witnesses, and there were quite a few. And I don't think they could have contained the story. So they, it was a very close call. If this had come out in 47, it would have been a challenge to American society. Let's just focus on the United States. Clearly, it would have been stunning. It would have been concerning. Plus, we'd just come out of a war, and people would have been in that mindset. Okay, well, is this the new enemy? Are we going to have to fight the extraterrestrials now? It would have been a bit more challenging. On the other hand, the American people had just gone through a long, massive war and stood up. They handled that. So, they're pretty resilient. This was a time in America was pretty resilient, in my view, a little less complicated. I think that, frankly, they would have handled it fine. Religion is going to be fine. It's not going anywhere. It's been around a long time, and it's somewhat adaptable, certainly. So I've always stated that I think religious memberships will go up after disclosure. But at the time that the truth embargo was being built, constructed, it would, given the fact that this idea of extraterrestrials was very much, and I make the pun deliberately, alien to the vast majority of people in this country. I mean, they just simply off the outside their spectrum, would have been a shock. But I would make the case that we would have adapted pretty quickly, and we would have accepted it, and we would have asked our government to address it and keep us informed, and we'd have started educating ourselves. But of course, the government had another problem. It wasn't just what the American people's reaction would be. They had they were in the early stages of what would be the Cold War, and they were very much concerned that there could be a nuclear war with the Soviet Union. There was certainly concern there would be a war with the Soviet Union. In fact, there were quite a few American military people that wanted to go to war with the Soviet Union immediately. And it could very well be nuclear, because they knew about the Soviet nuclear research, how far the progress they'd made, both in nuclear weapons as well as ballistic missiles. So they had a real tough situation. But this is now 60 years later, and hundreds of films about extraterrestrials have been made, some of them the most popular ever produced. The awareness of the issue is almost universal. The idea of an extraterrestrial is not even most people don't even give it a second thought. Half the American people and most of the industrialized nations believe that the ETs are here, in fact. So, again, I do not think the response will be panic, or there will be any massive disruption of our major institutions.
You know, the thing I believe is also there's a lot of people that have had a situation like myself where I actually saw something. And my first thought is I have this fear of ridicule, so I don't really talk about it. And I'm wondering, you know, how many people out there have had a situation happen that they feel the same way, because it just follows.
Well, certainly. One of the key aspects of the truth embargo was to ridicule the phenomena, ridicule the people that address the phenomena, to literally ghettoize it. I call it an intellectual ghettoization, which was very effective, so that people would be embarrassed to talk about it, embarrassed to certainly put money into research or activism. The press would be reluctant to cover it. This happens all the time in societies. It's a very effective tool of government. They can ghettoize people, they can ghettoize ideas, organizations. They can even ghettoize a whole area of science if they want to. It's a nasty business. We should never have that happen in the United States. We should never have it happen again. But that's up to the people. If they want to see that stop, they need to make their intentions, their desires heard. But it was very effective. So ridicule kept a great number of people pretty much contained. But that's changing rapidly. About 20% of the American people, when polled, say they've had a sighting of some consequence. Remarkably, between 2 and 7%, depending upon the nature of the question, indicate, again anonymously, that they believe they've had contact with extraterrestrials. It's an extraordinary number. And, of course, everybody knows what we're talking about. There's 100% cultural awareness of the idea of extraterrestrials and of UFOs. So given that, it's less and less of a peer pressure issue to come forward. However, within a person's personal life, one can definitely get some ridicule from some family members or a friend or two. Mm-hmm. And so you can experience it. But even then, I don't think it's of a drastic nature, because the issue is simply too much in play now. So somebody might kid you about it. They might joke a little bit. But the idea that they would kind of dismiss you as being crazy or really look down on you, this is really just less the case. There are people coming forward in the entertainment industry that are now talking about it more often and addressing it. You'll see much more of that. And, of course, there have been many witnesses and government people, such as astronauts Mitchell and Cooper and others, right, who are speaking directly to it. Their videos are all over YouTube. So, and other politicians and others. So, again, we're coming out of the truth. We're coming out of the intellectual ghetto process. We're coming out of the truth embargo process. The truth embargo is coming apart. And so I just don't think there's much risk to anybody addressing this issue. Now, there are aspects of this phenomena, and there are theories embedded in this phenomena or related to it that are really outrageous and out there, and probably completely bogus, and there are people that go there. And if you go far enough out of the box, if you get far enough outside the box, even with this issue or any other issue, yeah, you're going to get some negative feedback, and you can be ridiculed. But the fundamental issue is, are there extraterrestrials here or not, right? And that's pretty basic. It's not complicated. They're either here or they're not, and the evidence is overwhelming that they are. So if one stays close to home there and speaks in those terms, I had a sighting, I may be a contactee. By and large, it's less of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing that always seems to come up in this when people talk about this is, okay, you know, the nearest star, you know, is, what, four and a half light years away. Mm-hmm. How on earth, you know, do they get here? And I know there's all kinds of theories on that. But we're thinking in the terms that we know of.
Of course.
And these civilizations and other planets and other galaxies even, you know, could possibly be a billion years advanced because we're such a young solar system and a young planet.
Sure. That doesn't have to be a billion. 1,000 would be more than enough.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
The situation is exactly analogous to someone making a statement, say, back in 1850, that how could we possibly go to the moon?
Right.
Or even how could someone fly at high speeds, hundreds of miles an hour? The fact is they couldn't back then because they didn't have the technology. And we don't know how we could go to another star because we don't have the technology, and these ETs do. It's just that simple. It is the case that our current understanding of time and space is heavily relativity dominated, and the relativity theory seems to preclude travel between two star systems in any reasonable length of time. But even our own physics is starting to show that that ain't necessarily so. So, yeah, we don't know we don't have a full understanding of the physics of the cosmos. And so the idea that it could be physically possible to go between two stars absolutely cannot be precluded. And if you want to test that assertion that it's possible to go, you would, to one star to another in a reasonable amount of time, the first thing you do would be look for evidence of anyone doing that. That would be pretty obvious. I mean, it's one, you know, you don't necessarily have to prove how it's done. Just see if it is being done, and that makes the case. And when you look for evidence of visitation, it's all over the place. Now, that just because ETs are here doesn't necessarily mean that they have got the ability to travel between star systems in a reasonable amount of time. there is a possibility that they're coming from another dimension, another parallel reality that is nearby that doesn't even involve star travel. Or they could come from the future or the past. They could be time travelers. These are possibilities, but they happen to just be very low possibilities. And the most logical, the most straightforward explanation is they come from other planets. I mean, this is straightforward. Mm-hmm. And so either they spend enormous amounts of time in space and move around over huge numbers of years and centuries and millennia between places, or they're able to get back and forth using a different kind of physics. That's about what you're left with. And I have pretty, I do have some scientific training. I do have a degree in physics. I'm not alien to that kind of thinking. And I have high confidence. My view, my model for this is pretty straightforward. I believe there are other planets that have other civilizations like ours, and that they are more advanced with better technology. And they are, in fact, able to travel to stars, between stars, and do so in a manner that is functional and useful. And that some of them are engaging us. They are visiting here. It's that straightforward. Beyond that, you know, that's about as far as we can go right now.
Right.
I don't think it'll be that long before we will know, even if we don't have disclosure, even if the ETs don't provide us the explanation, if they haven't already, I believe on our own, we will probably figure out interstellar travel within 50 years.
Wow, that would be something. And I don't doubt that, the way technology is just, you know, like a snowball rolling downhill, you know, gathering all the time. I wanted to talk a little bit about, about 20 years ago, I had an insurance, life insurance agent, and he was hanging out at my house one day, and I don't know how we got on the subject, but he brought up the fact that he was involved in a special task in the Air Force during Vietnam, and it was UFO research. And mm-hmm. I don't recall if he said it was Blue Book, but I think that stopped in the 60s, didn't it? I'm not clear.
That was an investigation program when they were, in quote, investigating sightings.
Okay. Well, he was involved.
That's not the same.
He was involved in Vietnam itself, and he was saying that anywhere, he said when there was napalming, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, if anyone else has ever said it, but he told me when they were napalming that there were sightings all the time during the napalming, which is unusual. And he said that they were attracted to, you know, that was the first time I had ever heard of anything about them being attracted to, like, nuclear arms, weapons, and things like that. And he said, you know, I asked him the question. I said, so you were part of this task force or whatever it was. And I says, what's the bottom line? Are they really here? And he says, yes. And the government knows that. And this was, you know, 20 years ago, he told me that. And, you know, I've recently just got more interested in this since I had a situation happen a number of years ago. And one of the questions that comes to mind for me is when you get, in Bentwaters in England in 1980, when you get all these Air Force personnel, and you actually have a staff sergeant, I think it's James Pennington or something like that,
mm-hmm.
actually walked around the craft, touched it. He would, as far as I know, he'd probably be the only one that ever touched one, and then wrote down the hieroglyphics that were on it and all that. Now, these are not just, you know, random people for a sighting.
Right.
There was something like 80 people that saw this within a three-day time period. And then, you know, again, it's swept under the rug. The whole thing is swept under the rug.
Well, swept under the rug is probably not a precise enough phrase. The fact is that a substantial number of people that served in the military and also agencies have come forward to testify to events and evidence, that all of which is confirmatory of the ET presence, including a number of Air Force personnel who were involved in our nuclear deterrence. With high classification, including people that worked at SAC nuclear bases. talking about these craft interfering, coming down, and an interference taking place with our nuclear weapons, which is a pretty big deal. Recently, there was a press conference to that effect in Washington, and the major press, again, skirted it. They didn't. There was some press, there was some media coverage, but it wasn't anywhere near the appropriate amount and intensity that you would expect on a story like this. And the Bentwaters case, there are quite a few witnesses that have testified there. That was another, very likely another nuclear tampering event of sorts. But this reflects the truth embargo. The media went along with the truth embargo without, I think, any resistance or much resistance in the 40s and 50s, when the media, as we know it, was infant, just in its infant stages, incipient. The three networks hadn't been around for very long when Roswell happens. The first network news broadcast of 15 minutes occurred about 2 weeks before Roswell.
Really? Wow.
We had, our dependence was primarily on major newspaper dailies, and there were a number of papers that were papers of record. So if they got the papers of record, like the Washington Post, New York Times, LA Times, on board and the networks on board, they were able to maintain a media containment without any problem. The Cold War ensured that the media would continue to play along with the truth embargo. You know, it wasn't hard to convince them, I think, that this issue was highly explosive, implicative, that if it were to come out, it would clearly be destabilizing for a while. And we have thousands of nuclear warheads pointed over the poles. Mm-hmm. That could go off at any time, not to mention the submarines, and so we just can't risk it. And so while the Cold War was underway, the media was totally on board. By whatever mechanisms, some of it was simply institutionalized or status quo, but the truth embargo was going to be maintained. And so by the time the Cold War ends in 91, it's really over by end of 91, It's virtually institutionalized, and the media, which of course is a full generation later of reporters and editors and so forth, they just sort of, that was the way it was. You just didn't cover this. You just didn't treat this seriously. And so from 91 forward, the media was going along with it as a matter of standard operating procedure. That really doesn't start to change until after 2000. And then since 2000, the media, under a constant onslaught of new events, new research, new documents, new witnesses, slowly are coming out of their embargo mode and are covering the issue with a little more intensity. Not to the point that it should be covered, without question. They have not broken through. But they could at any time. And right now, one of the major factors in ensuring that the truth embargo ends is the fact that there's any number of points in the media spectrum where a breakout could occur. And a particular newspaper, a particular network, a particular investigative group would really plunge into the issue and start asking questions that are been known for years, decades even, but actually forcing those questions on to government and end the truth embargo fairly quickly. So that's where we are right now. And one of my principal tasks from the beginning, from 1996 when PRG was formed, is to keep pushing the media constantly, relentlessly, and letting them know that we're not going away, that the issue's not going away, and that they have not done their job. They have not acted in the proper fashion with respect to the most important issue in the world, and that one way or another, they're going to have to deal with it, and the sooner the better. The rewards will be great. There will be Pulitzer Prizes. There will be ratings increases. There will be plenty of benefits to the media if they finally take this issue on, but they haven't fully engaged it yet, but that could happen at any time.
I was watching a YouTube that you were on. I can't remember if it was Fox News or what. It was a female commentator, and at the end she said something like, after you were off camera, she said, and he's never seen a UFO himself. You know, like that, kind of like, mm-hmm. almost debunking everything you just stood for and said. And the media is just not on the side, I think. You know, but I have seen a few clips that the commentator at least certainly is involved in it.
Yeah. Television is a little more sensitive. They're a little more worried that they might be tainted if they show a serious approach. But there are exceptions. I think Larry King did a number of shows which treated this issue seriously.
Right.
Did CNN, did the rest of the CNN news operation follow suit? Did they follow up? No. It was contained to King. So CNN had his foot in the door, but it wouldn't walk all the way in. Paradigm Research Group has had its activities covered by scores of media. And if you go to the media archive, the articles archive at paradigmresearchgroup.org, in the main PRG site, you can read those and you can follow them. And overall, it's not bad. Coverage is reasonable. There are some flippant approaches. There's some negatives, but in general, they covered what PRG's been doing. Could they have covered it more? Absolutely, and they will. There will be more covered. So we're in transition. The media is coming out of the truth embargo. They are slowly coming out of it. And I think once that process did start, it's almost irreversible. It can't go backwards. So while it's easy to get angry at the media, ultimately we need them. And they could end the truth embargo at any time, so I try to be optimistic. I encourage your readers, there is only one book that's specifically addressed the media connection to the truth embargo. And it's by Terry Hansen. He's a journalist. And he addressed the issue in a book called Missing Times, News Media Complicity in the UFO Cover-Up. So if somebody wants to get a look at this, read that book. And just to make the point, hammer the point home, one of the cool and not properly understood stories out there is how the National Enquirer was founded and the Weekly World News. And PRG is going to be putting this out. I mean, PRG is going to be making a point to try to dig deeper into this story and get it out there. The point is the National Enquirer was founded by a young man who was able to get enough money, and it's not clear from where, to buy the New York Enquirer, rejigger it, and then republish it as the National Enquirer, as a tabloid. And very not that long after that, founded the Weekly World News. And these two tabloids, very early on, started putting stories out about the UFO issue, and particularly the Weekly World News, wild and crazy stuff and bizarre photos. And these were turning up in the news sections of the grocery store stands all over the country, ubiquitous. And Rudy Oso Pope was the gentleman that did this. And Rudy Oso Pope did it after spending a year at the psychological ops program at the CIA. This is something people need to understand. The National Enquirer was created as a disinformation tool for the CIA, as was the Weekly World News. I don't know if the connection is still there. Remember, they've consolidated some of these papers. The Weekly World News was shut down, though it has an internet presence. But for a good period there, these were tools of the CIA disinformation programs, which is another matter that the American people need to address. Do they ever want that to happen again in the United States? I encourage your listeners to check into a very important process that's going on. It is a petition process operating out of the White House website, www.whitehouse.gov. The Paradigm Research Group submitted a disclosure petition to this program. It received enough votes to get a formal response from the White House, and that came out on November the 4th. You can follow this at the information site, which is disclosurepetition.info. That response was the first formal position ever put in print by the executive branch of the United States government. it claims that there is no evidence at all for non-human intelligence engaging the Earth, the human race. This is a major project of Paradigm Research Group, and I can assure you we're going to be pursuing this intensely. There's already been an international press release on this. There will be much more. There will be a new petition that will go up in a few weeks, Disclosure Petition 2, and we're going to try to get 25,000 signatures for that. In the meantime, there is also another site. I encourage you to go to Paradigm Research Group's worlddisclosureday.org and endorse the attempt to get July 8th designated as World Disclosure Day, or it is designated as such, to endorse this idea as a way of drawing attention to the issue. WorldDisclosureDay.org. These are two important referenda that are out there for people to put their name behind moving forward to get disclosure of the ET presence finally done. And I appreciate talking with you this evening.
Great. Thank you so much. And that was all very fascinating. And that was Stephen Bassett. And below this podcast on the website, podcastufo.com, you will see two links, one to Paradigm Research Group website and one to worlddisclosureday.org is right below this podcast. Thank you for listening, and I hope to hear from you again. Our email address is info@podcastufo.com. Thanks a lot. Until next time.